a fruitless expenditure. We didn't want to see that. So if possible as well, we can make a positive contribution in this last quarter in terms of the main challenge that confronts the country, unemployment of young people. So even there, when we ask questions, we would be definitely focused on such issues. So it becomes bad if it is not done because of some other people. We may not necessarily say is the economic situation in the country. So those just few remarks to say the fourth quarter is very critical. It also helps you to correct whatever that you might have noted. That I know that it is almost coming to an end, even that fourth quarter I'm talking about. So there might be very little, but the little that you can do will be very happy. I just thought we should say so. And possible to remind members that our duty is to ensure that all executive organs of state in the national sphere of government are accountable. And this actually causes us to have some kind of relationship with the executive, a relationship of those who execute and those who conduct oversight. I know that I've underlined the term accountable to say it is usually interpreted in many ways. We have got that duty to make sure that we understand in the same way what we mean. In other words, we scrutinize and oversee executive action. So we are not the executive, but we scrutinize the action on the basis of the plans that we adopted. And where we see wrong, then we point it out. But equally, the demand now that government should be transparent. So in other words, we don't expect here to be told things that are hidden, if I can put it that way. We want people to be transparent, honest, and then manage the situation going forward together. And the year itself is going to be challenging, and I think those of you who might have observed what happened on the 13th, so well, we are public representatives. When we go home, those we represent, they ask difficult questions, and at times they think we are not properly representing them. So hence I'm saying it's good we are a democracy, but that democracy should respect everybody. So we will engage robustly, whether we are engaging the executive, whether we are engaging amongst ourselves in the name of the people that we represent. So I thought we should say so. So that I am able to say what I picked out from my constituency first, that they feel we didn't do much to deal or to represent them. And we dare not fail to represent the people who have caused us to be here. So that's generally the opening remarks to welcome you all. We met as a committee. You were not there. So we did welcome them. So as I was saying, then welcome to the minister and deputy minister and the DG and team. I think now we're no longer going to ask people to introduce themselves. It will only be when you think we don't know you, when you are about to speak, then you tell us you are so and so. So we may as well not deny people to tell us who they are, so that don't ask you. I hope there are guests. If there are any guests, I welcome them as well. The meeting itself, you might have had a message before, then a new agenda. Reason, so that you don't only get it from the secretary. Reason being that we are still in the process of discussing the State of the Nation address. Will be a debate today afternoon and tomorrow. The president will respond on the 20th, which is Thursday. So we had a feeling that it would be premature now, when we have not heard everybody and when we have not heard the president responding to such issues, that we must have that. So that is why then you just see one bullet in number two. So I thought I should explain that, but you said it must be corrected. Can we then first confirm if there are any apologies?
Morning, everyone. Chairperson, I received apologies from Honorable Mbatha, Honorable Tongwane, Honorable Weber, Honorable Lorimer, and PM has got a doctor's appointment. She will join us later. Thanks.
Okay. Those are the apologies. There's the agenda. One item, any proposal for adoption? Moved by Honorable Winkler.
Honorable Chairman, Minister, good morning, police. I hope they're not going to take 3 hours to present. That's probably a guideline in the agenda. Yeah, because we should give them six hours so we can ask some questions.
Proposed, seconded, no other view. Then that concludes that first portion. Minister, we have already welcomed you, said it's a new year in terms of the calendar, the last quarter. It gives you an opportunity to amend or correct whatever that might have been coming throughout the year. I pointed out what we'll be focusing on. Our focus is on any commitment that was made for development. Because where we come from, people are yearning for development. Clean government. Said this time, if you have fruitless expenditure, it takes away from the poor. So we'll also not be very keen to have that. And any other issues. But we actually indicated the relationship between ourselves and the executive, so that as we continue doing our work, we understand that. Otherwise, I just thought I should take you on board before I say I'm handing over.
Chair, good morning, and best wishes for 2020 to yourself and to the committee. Allow me to apologize for arriving here after you had started the meeting. I'm afraid we encountered heavy security at the gate, sweeping off all cars. It was very difficult to get in. So my humble apologies. I'm going to, first of all, let me acknowledge your opening remarks, and let me say that we will do our best as a department to fulfill your expectations, and where we are not able to do that, we will make sure that we have credible reasons. I would then, on that note, like to hand over to the Director General, who is with us this morning, so that she can present the State of Environment report. Thank you very much, Chair.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. Thank you, Minister, for allowing me to make this presentation on behalf of the department. Honourable members, we are presenting the State of the Environment report, and you asked that we outline what are the emerging issues and how we are dealing with those in respect of informing priority interventions. I would just like to state that the Environment Outlook is a prescribed report in terms of NEMA, chapter or section 16A, wherein the Minister is expected to publish an outlook report for the Republic in intervals of 4 years. That same section also provides for provinces, the MECs, to make similar reports. So currently we have about 6 provinces that have presented their reports, and ours is then going to be published. It was supposed to have been published in 2019. So I would like to then get straight into the presentation. We start the presentation by outlining the climate change impacts that are coming out of the report. Specifically, the key messages are related to the warming that is being observed scientifically over the period of 1931 to 2015, in particular in our country, the Western Parts and the Northern Cape being the areas that are beginning to be more warm and having spells of long droughts, as you may have observed. We have the report states that already as a country we have seen an increase in warming at about an average of 2 degrees Celsius, which is even higher in comparison with other countries of the world. The associated increases in annual number of hot days have also occurred. And there is also a strong evidence to significantly state that, or at least statistically it's been confirmed that there are increases in rainfall that occur in the south interior of our country, in particular some eastern parts of the Eastern Cape, northeastern parts, and also the KwaZulu-Natal areas. Over the period that's projected 2021 to 2015. Honourable members, again, the other phenomenon that's painted in respect of the report is this extreme daily rain events that have increased over the same areas, in particular extending northwards into the northwest and Free State and Gauteng. Over the Limpopo region, there is evidence to indicate significant decreases in annual rainfall totals. The climate change report or the policy of the country is based on our understanding of the greenhouse gas emissions profile. As you can see in that graph, the blue part, which is a significant area that's bigger than all the other colors, it indicates that our greenhouse gas composition has got a greater profile coming out or contributed by the energy sector or energy generation, which is around 79.5%. Industrial processes contribute about 7.7%. Forestry and land use changes, emissions that arise from land use changes at around 9.2%, and the waste sector, because again landfills produce methane gas and other gases, and that contributes around 3.6%. So our policy interventions, when I talk later on what then in respect of our plans and priorities, I will then draw from what I have outlined. I'm now moving into the biodiversity sector. The graph, as you see the bar on the ecosystems, and then the right bars are on the species, the situation from the National Biodiversity Assessment Report of 2018 indicates that most of our ecosystems under threat, in particular the areas of strategic water sources, wetlands areas and rivers, notably also the estuarine ecosystems, are endangered and vulnerable. Similarly, coastal ecosystems are moderately endangered but significantly vulnerable, and then we can also see there that there is an indication that on the species level, fishery species are endangered and vulnerable. And lastly, when I go to the next slide shows that I've already gone through the messages, shows that in respect of the levels of protection, our ecosystem protection, you can note that, honorable members, we have the largest bar, that's green, to the right, which indicates our sub-Antarctic area that is significantly protected, followed by the marine, which is our marine protected area system, and then the coastal areas are somewhat reasonably or moderately protected. However, when you look at the freshwater systems, rivers and wetlands, these are the areas of least protection. So in essence, from the data, it's clear that we need to have more efforts to protect our strategic water sources. And on the species protection level on the far right, you note that in terms of our plant species, over 50% of our plant biodiversity is well protected, reptiles, birds, and mammals, but our freshwater species are not reasonably protected, or they are poorly protected, as I already alluded. It does not mean then, honorable members, that our efforts in terms of terrestrial ecosystems are sufficient. I think the key also is our effectiveness, even in respect of those areas that are referred to the reasonably protected. On air quality, honorable members, our overall state of the air quality in South Africa indicates that we have most problematic air pollutants, being PM10 and PM2.5, which is particulate matter, and sulfur dioxide is still a problem in some areas, as it contributes to secondary pollution in terms of it, when sulfur dioxide mixes with chemicals in the air, in the atmosphere, or water, it then results in particulate matter 2.5, and at times those particulate matter are quite toxic particulate matter. So that's the reason why there is a concern around the national average levels also of sulfur dioxide. Mining-related activities and burning of dirty fuels, indoor pollution or indoor burning contributes more to PM10, whilst industrial combustion and vehicle emissions contribute to PM2.5, which is the smaller particulate matter. Honourable members, continuing in the next slide, I also then go straight to the graph to indicate before the graph that our air quality indicators in priority areas are consistently above the standard ambient air quality that we have proclaimed as a country, and significantly also since 2015 We had tightened the standards before 2015. The standards were much relaxed, and 2015 onwards, our ambient air quality standards have been enhanced. In respect of the graph that you see there, honourable members, this graph again is outlining our the trends in respect of air quality pollution since 2007 up to 2017, and our standard is the blue line, and the dotted red line indicates the reports that we've had nationally. But overall, when you look at the air quality in respect of the particulate matter and sulfur dioxide in hot spot areas, we are then trending above the ambient air quality standard as it is reflected there with the red line. The next graph, honourable members, again, we are just outlining there that we have been tracking policy indicators, because in essence, when you look, if you recall at the last meeting where we were presenting air quality reports, sulfur dioxide appears to be within the ambient air quality standard level, but except in high priority areas like the high veld as well as the water bank. So our policy interventions then are following what is outlined in respect of those graphs and our interventions in the high veld and Vaal, and as well as the Waterberg Bujanala areas. So we are tracking again there that our air quality has been poor in those high priority areas, though there was some dip in the high veld in around 2014, which is the period when we had still still flood in the country. But after that, again, we see a peak in respect of of the pollutants going above the trend line, which is the ambient air quality standard. Similarly, in the Vaal, there is a trend downward after 2016. However, the data, the raw data, still reflects that mostly we are not we are trending above the ambient air quality standard. In respect of oceans and coast, honourable members, here we have the research and the data suggests that the sea level rise rates along the southern African coastline are currently more below what we would have expected, but there is some warming that is being picked in the areas of the west coast and south coast, and the 1 point something figures just indicate how much those changes are happening. So they look small, but they are significant in terms of melting, and therefore we the report indicates that in respect of our expectations as a country, sea level and increased storm frequencies will continue to be seen to be increasing saltwater intrusions and raising groundwater tables, which would influence flooding or increase flooding in some of the coastal areas. And that also results in the erosion, especially in terms of our estuarine environment that links to the coast or the inshore of the ocean. Approximately 22% of the coastal developments are threatened by sea level rise. Again, this is more a measure of how we can make sure that we prevent developments 15 meters near shore, if possible, within our planning as a country when we plan development. South African waters are increasingly impacted by a number of source pollution activities that arise from land-based activities, and there is effluent that gets into the sea, particularly the plastics and other waste materials coming through the rivers and the estuaries into the ocean environment. On the waste, honorable members, here you have a table that summarizes generation of waste and how we are managing waste in South Africa. That report states that waste types, starting from organic waste up to plastics, how we have been generating. I mean, we see, if you look at the first column, there we have a tonnage of about 90 million, for example, generation of organic waste, and you can then see the bottom, ash is about 6.4 million tons annually, and how we have been stockpiling it, and also recycling or recovery in terms of meeting our national waste management strategy. So as a country, I think overall, treatment of waste has been quite and below what is the desirable level, and we have been more focusing on disposal, which is why we have more landfills, and 65% of all of these waste streams that are generated end up in landfills or in our spaces that we should be using for productive purposes. The next slide summarizes again generation of hazardous materials in South Africa and how those hazardous materials are recycled or recovered, and in some instances we don't have even proper treatment facilities for them, and we end up having disposal at sitting at about 92.7% as a country. Then lastly, on waste, honorable members, we've outlined the what generation comes from municipal and then paper, plastic, glass and metals, which have been priority waste streams. What has been the generation in 2017 versus 2011, what the difference in those recycling rates has been, and whether we have been able to achieve the desired recycling rates. So from the waste information system, which has been operational since 2006 in the department, we have had challenges of accuracy of data, but at least reasonably we can outline that there is a general disposal and from source to disposal and limited recycling rates in respect of the various waste streams. And facilities have been registered, and in some instances we've had landfill sites that were never permitted and therefore not even handling waste in accordance with the national standards. The next slide, honourable members, relates to our work, or at least tracking the state of land degradation in our country, and we have prominence of land dryness and wind erosion, particularly in the areas of the Northern Cape, Northwest, and greater parts of the Eastern Cape. We have acidic soils prevalent in the KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, Mpumalanga, Free State, Gauteng, and Northwest provinces. And in respect of the desertification, we have a convention that deals with how we manage desertification and reduce land degradation in the country. Free State has lost its dry, sub-humid areas in the east, and there was a small amount of desertification in the northwest, where arid land has replaced semi-arid areas. Continuing again on land degradation, in respect of land cover change, the assessment indicates that the national at the national level, there's a total increase of about 3.27% of transformation of land, which is associated with urban expansion, mining, cultivation, and plantations in the respect of forestry, and also 15.26% transformation of land since 2009, when we released our report, State of the Environment report previously. So these are the factors that are reported and based on the science that we receive from the various agencies. And the map itself, honorable members, gives us an indication of been the land use change from 1990 up to 2018, and you can see there's more brown color, more also on when you look at the top part of the map, and the arrows indicate what has been the transformation in terms of agricultural land, 21%. In terms of mining footprint, we've had an increase of about 34%, increases of urban footprint, commercial cultivation of land, and total plantation footprint has increased by 24%. So that's what that graph signifies, honorable members. And lastly, getting into biological invasions. Again, here we're talking about plants that are non-indigenous that we import or we have imported, and both in terms of our plantations, we have gum trees which are non-indigenous, we have pine trees, wattle, and so on, which we have commercial value for as a country. Similarly, also in terms of beautifying our gardens, some of those plants have become invasive and they threaten our biological diversity because they don't have natural enemies in South Africa, and hence their growth rates then tend to outcompete the natural biodiversity. So this is what we have. We have a rate of introduction per year, 7%. We have a number of invasive species which have major impacts. We're sitting at about 107 species, and the extent of South Africa that suffers major impacts from invasion in terms of land area is 1.4% of the land area, and our level of success in managing invasion has been around 5.5%. This continues to just expand both the fact that we have the situation of invasion from species that are either terrestrial or water species or marine species. Some of the fisheries that we have in our freshwater systems are non-indigenous, and also in our marine environment. And some are bird species and even amphibians. The next slide outlines the reductions in water resources if no remedial action is taken, estimated to be between 3,600 million cubic meters per annum. Again, South Africa is a water scarce country, so in most of those water catchment areas, we need to really control biological invasions as far as possible. High level imaging and what honorable members asked for in respect of our priorities and intervention. In light of the above outlined on climate and the number of areas, I would then indicate the key priorities. The Minister has already identified a number of priorities that should be and reinforced in the department in respect of our priorities. On climate change, already we're focusing on building climate resilience using the district development model, and this work is underway, and when we present the APP, we'll be able to reflect on what measures we will be utilizing. Finalizing a national low emissions development strategy, again, this includes resource use efficiency, in particular working with the sectors, energy, water, in respect of conservation or water demand side management, circular economy, how we contribute to scaling up of renewables in terms of the energy generation, shift of mode of transport from rail to road, and also other options in respect of investment in electrical vehicles. The next slide, improving stakeholder engagement. Again, this is an area that the Minister has given guidance to the department to prioritize creating awareness about what the impacts of climate change are, how people should be preparing themselves, working with the entities like the South African Weather Services and those plans will then be reflected when we present our APP to the committee. Our process of revising the nationally determined contributions as we prepare for the Conference of Parties for the end of this year, we are expected to increase the ambition to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. As I already indicated, that we are the major contributor, especially from the energy generation point of view from the earlier slide, and therefore our interventions as a country in respect of how we are going to scale up and make sure that we increase our ambition to reduce emissions, how we will work with provinces and municipalities to assist with improving their climate risk reduction strategies, and some periodic engagements with stakeholders at a national level, both at a ministerial and intergovernmental level. Biodiversity, again, in this respect, the expansion of the conservation estate takes from the fact that our ecosystems are under threat, and there are areas where, especially in the Northern Cape, we have this square kilometer array, and we're looking at a protected area being declared, a national protected area in that part of the Northern Cape. Protection of the key strategic water sources and catchments, working with the Department of Water and Sanitation and the Mapungubwe Transfrontier National Park being inscribed by our heads of state. Our land rehabilitation programs will focus on limiting and halting land degradation so that we meet land degradation neutrality as a country that has a number of areas which are declared to be dry land, as well as our investment in rehabilitation of wetland ecosystems and including other protection measures. We are repositioning our strategies to combat illegal trade in species and poaching, including enhancing the work on rhino poaching, but expanding that to also include our fishing areas, specifically abalone poaching and other important fisheries. Air quality, in this respect, taking from the fact that we have the priority areas, we will review the national priority area air quality management plans to make sure that they are tighter than they are currently, and also the minister is still to develop and publish national priority area regulations as it was stated at the last meeting last year, which was discussing air quality matters. Oceans and coast, again here we have the oceans economy review and the development of the master plan. The focus here is both on investment in ship building, particularly to replace the vessels that are involved in research, working with other government departments to make sure that we are able to make this investment timeously and improve our capability in respect of surveillance of the coast, as well as fishing and sector research that is to inform the sustainability and how we give fishing rights in future. Repositioning the strategy and measures to combat illegal trade in poaching, specifically making sure that we have sufficient capability to enforce and to protect what has recently been declared as new marine protected areas, and also to make sure that there is enough capability to prevent unregulated fishing and illegal fishing of natural resources. Development of the national estuary management plans, again from the ecosystems that are threatened, this is one area where we need as a department and a sector working with municipalities reinforce our capabilities and plan to protect the estuaries. We will finalize the Antarctica and Southern Ocean strategy and also focus on the implementation of processes that will ensure that we have fishing rights allocation processes that are informed and credible. Capacitation and support in terms of small-scale enterprises, this is an area where the Minister has already initiated a process of collaboration with the Department of Small Business to assist small-scale fishers and both in terms of capabilities, in terms of providing some of the tools like processing facilities and upgrading of harbors or small harbors. On waste, here, honorable members, already the minister has published decisions on non-approval or closing of the Section 28 process in respect of tires, as well as the packaging and electronic waste streams. And in this, in terms of then the new process, so looking at a voluntary industry plans, which are in terms of Section 18, and that process will then ensure that we have better diversion of the waste stream and beneficiation. And the waste tire plan, the minister has appointed an organ of state in terms of the regulatory provisions, CSIR, in partnership with the Department of Trade and Industry, and Competition, and the Department of Science and Innovation. They are already, they've initiated the process of developing a tire plan, working with the industry. Chemicals Industry Waste Master Plan, this initiative already in partnership with the private sector is underway, and we will then have a plan that has a commitment from the industry in respect of how they're going to finance and make sure that we make the relevant investments to improve the management of chemicals in the country. There is a process to review and repurpose the role of the Waste Bureau. Honorable members, the Waste Bureau was involved in the operations of tires, and they now that activity will was a mission drift, and because its purpose is not to run operations of any industry plan, and that is why we have that review. And the next aspect, honorable members, relates to the capacitation and support of municipalities to manage waste better, both from a landfill management collections as well as separation at source, including the infrastructure investment. Buyback centers have not been working sufficiently because they are not linked to industry and to enable diversion and the uptake in respect of the investment on recycling upstream. Co-creation of the Waste Economy Master Plan with the industry, I've already alluded to that, honorable members. So that's what we have put forward in respect of what is being outlined as priorities to respond to some of the key findings flowing out of the State of the Environment report. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. You want to comment before? Okay, let's engage then. Honorable Winkler,
thank you, Chair, and thank you, DG, for the report. I see a large portion of this presentation was dedicated to climate mitigation as well as resilience. I'd like to know, what is the timeline at present of the climate change bill? Where is it sitting at present, and when can we expect that to be ratified? What is the delay? I see that we still have plans for an energy mix that constitutes building more coal-fired stations in 2023, I think that is. And I'm not sure why, when we have such high CO2 emissions, we're still planning on contributing to an excess of these emissions by building more coal-fired plants. I want to point you to a peer-reviewed article called The Pathway Towards Achieving 100% Renewable Electricity by 2050. This is by 2050, so we'll meet our target in terms of the Paris Agreement. It's going to create better jobs that are better quality, more jobs. It's going to lend to a better environment for our people and for animals. So I'm not sure why there's this hesitance to do this transition. And I understand the just transition. I do. But we need to look at the short term versus the long term payoff here. And a sacrifice initially has huge benefits for us, especially in an economy where we have such high unemployment. So I just need to understand the rationale behind this, please. Then I also direct you to page 8. In terms of air quality, I think it's bullet point 3. There has been no compliance with the National Ambient Air Quality Standards since we started monitoring the trends from 2003 to 2010. So for 7 years, there was non-compliance, if I'm reading this correctly. And what was done during this period to ensure that the ambient air quality standards were being adhered to, and how was this then addressed post 2010, because I know we have huge air quality issues, not only in the priority areas, but also in the South Durban Basin, where a lot of the air quality monitoring stations are, in effect, not working most of the time, or the data that they're providing is unreliable. The municipality does not make the data accessible to the community. There is very limited community participation, when in fact the residents are the ones who are suffering at the brunt of these industries. Then, if I could take you to, I'm going to backtrack now, to the climate change GHG emissions graph. No page number here. At the bottom right-hand corner, you've got the 2016 top 20 fuel combustion CO2 emissions ranked by country. What you fail to put or show there is that we are actually number 14 on that list. We are part of the problem. We are contributing alongside those countries to, I think it's something like over 70% of global CO2 emissions. How are we addressing this? So our greenhouse gas emissions per capita are in fact higher than all the average of the other G20 countries, but yet our development rate is lower than huge countries like India and China. So how are we actually justifying this GHG per capita when we can't even match the development trajectories of these other developing nations? How are we justifying this? All right, then, sorry, I'll be quick with the rest. In terms of the waste, the waste approach by the department, I don't see any mention of creating waste picker cooperatives. So again, we sit with a huge unemployment rate in this country, and I see how the department is going to be providing support to local municipalities. Why aren't we equipping them with the tools and perhaps expertise they need to absorb many people from an informal sector that is actually operating quite well, but with a lack of support and vulnerability, creating these employment opportunities for these disenfranchised individuals and creating waste cooperatives in our municipalities. If in KZN, I'm going to be driving this issue. There are tons of people that need work, and I don't understand why there's a lack of will to really absorb them and capacitate them and give them the support that they need. They're doing recycling initiatives where the municipalities are failing dismally. And we have recycling as a huge issue in this country, and I don't understand why we aren't using the resources that we have at our disposal We just need some leadership and direction. All right, then, with regards to page 24, climate change, the establishment of the Presidential Climate Change Coordinating Committee. What is the timeline on that, please? So when do we hope to see this established? You spoke about biodiversity and the priority areas. We spoke about poaching and conservation, but no mention was made of the canned lion hunting industry, despite the public outcry on this issue, despite the public interest on the issue, despite the numerous times that we as a portfolio committee have brought this to the department's attention. And so I'm wondering why no mention is being made of this in this presentation. It's very concerning to me, especially with the coronavirus outbreak that's causing global panic due to illegal trafficking of pangolins. We have a problem in this country where lion bones and trophy skeletons are being exported legally, but traffickers are using that as a means to actually get their illicit goods out of the country. So these two things work hand in hand. And I think that we're going to take this threat seriously. We really need to address the canned lion hunting issue as well, because it's a known fact that bones of tigers and other animals are smuggled in these permit exports of the lion bones. So this industry needs to come to an end, and I think we really need to address this seriously. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman, and thank you for the presentation, DG. Honourable Winkler has raised a number of issues which are quite detailed and specific, but mine would start off. I would like to inquire, you said six provinces have presented the reports, so which are the three outstanding provinces, and when can those reports be expected? And you know, if I had to score the state of the environment from this report here, which is a very, very honest report, maybe 3 out of 10. I don't know how the minister or the DG would react to that, but certainly well below 5 in terms of the overall environment in South Africa that we are exposed to. But maybe I'd like to hear your views on that. But I think my general point to you, Chairperson, is that there's a lot of detail on the challenges, but on the interventions, we short on detail. And maybe we need at the next meeting what particular intervention, unpack the interventions in terms of programs, time frames, costing, etc., etc. I mean, there are a number of things here that may not be possible for the next 5-6 years because of budget constraints and other constraints. So when one has to look at that, what you come up, then one would have to prioritize. You know, and suggest as a portfolio committee and engage with the department on exactly what we believe should be done. For example, air quality is a red flag. It's a serious red flag here. And I can't understand why we need to consult as much as we are trying to do in terms of air quality and chemical products with industry. We should be telling them exactly what, you know, what the benchmarks are, and they must comply. So maybe we can get some response to that. What I'd also like to know, you know, I'm very excited about the electric cars and other interventions, but what kind of interministerial, interdepartmental interaction takes place? I mean, these are ideals that we would strive for, but, you know, we say transport systems. Is transport thinking of, you know, moving, I know the President spoke about rail, etc., but are we moving away to the type of transport that you know, are environmentally friendly, like in other countries around the world? Do we have enough of these power stations where you can charge your motor cars? Because one of the challenges, you know, I read in a motoring magazine was people don't want to buy these cars because you don't have enough places to charge. And then there's no incentives. I know I have a particular brand of car. And then they have an electric car there. They can't sell that vehicle. They won't even give it away. Nobody wants to take it because you don't know where to charge. So I mean, these kind of broad interventions that will encourage, you know, us to buy cars that, you know, electric cars. I was in Germany recently, and, you know, it's just fantastic the way they operate with these type of cars, which assist the environment. Then on waste management, you know, we need to see how much of support is being given to our municipalities, financial and educational support. You know, Honorable Chairperson, you go to informal settlements, I go to informal settlements, we go and fish in that pond for votes. But when you look at the waste in those areas, you know, it's just incredible. And that can be avoided. And are they dumping because they don't have bins, they don't have, you know, the facilities where they can put their rubbish? So these are questions we have to ask, and we have to ask municipalities. You know, it's well and good to blame communities for throwing things all around, but do they have the facilities where they can deposit rubbish? But having said that, I was in Taiwan recently, and we went to the oldest part of Taiwan, in Taipei, with where the city originated. It's a market. Through you, Chair, Honourable Minister, you won't find a single paper on the floor. Nothing, nothing, nothing in a market area because of education. Because children are educated at that level. So what are we doing at the school level, at the grade R level, to inculcate in our children's mind the importance of this, because they can take that message home. With regard to your fishing policies, you know, I think we must go for the big fish, Minister. And the big fish are the trawlers that are coming into our oceans here. And I don't think, I'd like to hear what capacity we have in terms of green scorpions and law enforcement to monitor these kinds of transgressions that are taking place. Let's leave the line fishermen and all these other fishermen alone. Let them carry on with an honest living. I mean, of course, we have to have restrictions on the number of shad you can catch and things like that, because we want them to reproduce. But I think let's go after the big fish. And to that extent, what capacity do we have to go after these trawlers that come here? I mean, you know recently, through you, Chairperson, Honourable Minister and DG, about the shark heads. You know, the sharks that were found off the coast. Yeah, the Western Cape. Somebody was taking them away, and probably was, I don't know, load shedding or whatever, whatever happened, they dumped those sharks overboard. I mean, what are we doing in that regard? So, Chairperson, I would like to see, you know, us unpacking the interventions as we move along with the committee. And we just hope that, as the Chairperson said in the beginning, that fourth quarter doesn't show that you've got a lot of money left over and there's no fiscal dumping, because I think if we use our money wisely throughout the every quarter with these interventions, then we'll get value for money. And I think I'll stop there for now.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the Honourable Minister. Thank you, DG, for the presentation. Firstly, I appreciate the presentation. It gives us a lot of information that I think it's important for us to move forward. My first question is on, I think it's on page 4, where it talks about greenhouse gas emissions. When the DG was presenting, she said that the total net agriculture, forest and other land use emissions are 9.2%. I'm worried, is there a plan of reducing that? Because I know agriculture, forestry, and are important for the economic growth of the country. But is there a way that we can reduce those emissions? If there isn't, can we have a plan of reducing them? And also, the DG also spoke about problem of the landfill sites which produces methane. I thought I would get something specific from the interventions that are required that talks to that in particular. I haven't seen it, but
I would like also to suggest that as we move forward, we take I'm going to this page where it talks about one of them. Under climate change, where there is a periodic ministerial interactions with the civil society. I would like to propose that it is extended to mayors and speakers meetings with our honourable minister, where they will talk about these issues of the landfill sites and also the air pollution or the air quality, and their role in terms of advocating for green economy in their areas, using that platform with the minister and whilst the technicians or the technocrats are continuing with their engagements, but also at that level of our honourable minister taking that forward. And the legislation that he also spoke about, the landfill sites that are not permitted, they are there, but they are not permitted to do what they are doing. Do we have the proposed legislation or do we have to propose something that can cap that, so that we don't have those landfill sites because they are problematic. And on page 7, where we talk about the level of the species protection level, the freshwater fishes. When you look at that graph, it just indicates that when it says well protected, it's only less than 50%. Although I can't specify the percentage there in that particular graph. So, which then means it should be taken as a priority also in terms of its protection, in terms of making sure that we have that those freshwater fishes as a species that are of high priority. If they can be flagged as one of those species that are important for protection, and we have the plan when it is presented next time for that. But also to commend what the collaboration with Department of Small Business Development, that one is really appreciated. I really appreciate that one. And I so wish that we continue, and because it's going to assist in terms of job creation, in terms of developing the economy in the areas where we really need them. Maybe we also not just talk about fisheries only, Honourable Chair, through you to the Minister. That we don't also concentrate on fisheries, but also take it to waste and all the other sections of the department. And then the last one is on the implementation on the last page. I think it's page 27, where the strategy, the implementation of the fishing rights allocation process. 2021, if we can have a time frame for that, so that we know when are we finishing with that process, so that we can see it rolling and impacting on the communities. Thank you.
Thank you and good morning. thank you for the presentation, but I think we the presentation is not going to take us anywhere, because there's a lot of it's very light on what real interventions the department is driving to address critical issues. And for example, we speak about air quality, and yet we don't speak about how we engage the energy and mining sector to address the issues of air quality. And also, on page 3, we speak about, you know, there's climate change, but we can also see in South Africa there's a climate shift where we now have significant increases in rainfall in Northwest, Free State, and Gauteng province, and the Western interior. So how are we advising the Department of Water and Sanitation and coming up with ways, and possibly dams, to harvest this rainfall in those areas now, or is it just going to flow away? And we still, because these are also the areas, Free State especially, I've been there over the past week, and there's no water in many of the towns there, so, and yet there's rainfall. It was raining there. So, you know, having this knowledge and not acting upon it, what are we doing with that knowledge? And also, you know, we on page 23, we speak about building local climate change resilience using a district development model. And as the Honourable Singh has said, we need to know what these programs are, and we need to, you know, come up with ways of showcasing these programs and actually creating an awareness about what is being done, not just about what the impact or how climate change is affecting our lives, but what are we doing to mitigate climate change. We need to know what those programs are. I mean, my little daughter, she just started primary school, so she says she's eating very healthy. She doesn't want to eat meat because cows are bad. Honorable Winkler would like that. On page 25, I like that we're recognizing the biodiversity in but, you know, here in Cape Town, there's a Cape Flats aquifer. It's an underwater lake, and it is a vast resource. And the Philippi Horticultural Area has been involved with a battle, a long-standing battle with the city of Cape Town, who wants to pave over the Philippi Horticultural Area. And, you know, an aquifer needs to be recharged, and it needs to be, you know, so rainfall, it captures the rainfall, it gets stored in the aquifer, the underground lake. There are artificial ways of recharging the aquifer, like there's a water recycling plant, and we could use that water and recharge the aquifer. But, you know, more importantly, it has to harvest the natural rain and store it in the aquifer. And the city of Cape Town wants to pave over it and build nice gated villages and shopping complexes. And, you know, it's typical. You know, capitalists will destroy the environment, and for all of us, we have to. So I'd like to know, what role we play as the Department of Environment to speak to people like Nazir Sonle and Susanna Coleman, who are driving that battle on behalf of all of us here, to assist them. Obviously, they've now won the battle in the court to place the moratorium on any development in the Philippi Horticultural Area. But, you know, I think we, as department, environment has neglected its responsibility and its mandate to actually be part of that matter. And, you know, it's we can reduce the strain on our oceans substantially when we
other countries, you know, where they 50% of the fish they consume is from aquaculture, whereas here in this country, you know, even the 1% fish that you consume from aquaculture is not from local aquaculture projects, and I've yet to see a successful aquaculture project. And maybe now that fisheries is with the environment, you know, I would hate that we don't realize how we can also improve the environment by moving away from the normal or the traditional sources of fish to aquaculture. It could also reduce the high unemployment in industry. Obviously, we can allocate fishing rights, but you know, there's just that much fish to allocate to people, so we can create new sources of income and new for these fishers. And you know, it's one of the changes that we have to effect. You know, instead of going out there with your nets, you now have to go and consider yourself as farming fish rather than going to harvest it from the sea. So, you know, along with what Honorable Singh has also said, it's you know, it's a complete change in the way we used to do things, and moving from road transport to rail transport, because you know, if electricity is something that can be renewed, even though we are having challenges currently, I'm sure, you know, once that mind shift from coal power stations, nuclear power stations to renewable energy sources, that we could have an abundance of energy and move and really change people from moving to rail transportation. I mean, we COP25 was in a perfect city where they've got a vast rail network that runs under the ground and it reduces the strain on the environment because there's not that many cars. Imagine all of those people traveling by car. So how about we, also speaking to the Minister of Transport, come on, get your act together, provide alternative means. I mean, it's terrible. I wish I could get on a train and come to Cape Town from the northern suburbs. It would have been wonderful, but I can't. The risk, because those trains are late, not on time, you know, whereas in Madrid, every 2 minutes there's a train. Honorable Winkler and I took 7 trains before we could finally get the correct train, but they ran on time every 2 minutes, so we never had a problem getting to where we needed to be. So, you know, so we are so far behind, and in terms of harnessing our own natural resources, like sunlight, and with increased temperatures and increased number of warm days, how are we actually using that change in, or that climate shift to our advantage? And I think unless we actually come with the real plans and implement them, it's, you know, we're going to see that 5% where we will actually become extinct as human beings. So we've got a very short time to act. You know, it's, and if we don't act quickly and get government to buy into an alternate way of getting our nutrition and transportation, we are going to be the cause of our own extinction. So I think, you know, we need to see the practical implementation of programs is climate change, as opposed to vast academic presentations about what to do. And I know, I understand the challenge that we have, because we have to speak to energy, minerals, transportation. So, but Minister, if you can drive that, we will support you. I think I speak for myself, or in my third party, but
you speak for me.
No, thank you very much. And thank you to all the honourable members for all of the extensive questions. So let's start at the beginning. We intend to table the climate change bill in this 2020 sitting of Parliament. I think the hold-up has been that the bill has been in NEDLAC, and we've been doing work in NEDLAC to make sure that we synergize the issue of carbon budgets in the bill with the question of the carbon tax. I think that was a request from both business and labour. So that work is concluding, and we are hoping that within this year we will be tabling the bill. I'm sure, honourable members, you heard lots of things about energy security and the energy mix, and the President gave direction on that matter. And I think that anything else you would want to say on energy, you should be addressing to the Minister of Energy, because I'm sure you understand that he is responsible for energy. On air quality, colleagues, we gave you a very, very extensive presentation on this matter, right down to which monitoring stations were working, which are not working, what is our plan to fix the monitoring stations, how we are trying to mobilize the capital to do that. We also went extensively through who has power for what. So I'm really hoping that the honourable members have good memories and that they also have good filing systems. And should they wish more detail on that, they have it. It's in their filing systems. I also understand, Chair, that you are planning to visit the Durban South Basin, and you will be able to pose whatever questions you need to pose directly to the municipality that is responsible for air quality in that area. And I think we went extensively in that presentation through the issue of who licenses who is responsible for what. So I really don't want us to get into that again today, because we have dealt with it very, very extensively. On the issue of waste, I think that what is important to say here is that we are in the process, particularly with regard to packaging, e-waste, LED bulbs, e-waste, electronic bulbs and tires. We are in the process of calling for new plans that would be led by the industries. And the idea of doing that is that we want to ensure that those who produce that waste are directly involved in its recycling and reuse. And part of the direction that we are giving is that we have to be looking at the whole value chain, including those who we would define as informal waste collectors or waste pickers. Because what we understand is that the most intensive work is the picking or the collection, but the money is in the recycling and the reuse. And it's very important that you have to look at the value chain as a whole, so that you make sure that where the profits are, reach the people who are doing the most intensive work. And that is the problem in the sector at the moment, is that the profits are in the recycling and the reuse. The hard labour is in the picking. But those profits are not being shared across the value chain. And that is, I think, what we're trying to address in the voluntary industry plan. And it is what we're trying to address in the work that we are doing with the Department of Small Business Development, so that we must make sure that those who are involved in informal collection are actually being able to put up a viable livelihood through the development of a viable enterprise that has access to where the money actually lies. So I think it's very important that colleagues understand that particular issue. With regard to the Presidential Climate Change Commission, the President has indicated that he will be establishing that within this year. Now, when we look at the question of CO2 emissions, I think it's very important to understand that while our country is one of the top 14 emitters in the world, we are only responsible globally for 2% of emissions. So it's very important to keep that in perspective. It doesn't mean that we don't have a moral duty to reduce our emissions. It doesn't mean that we don't have to redetermine our NDCs. It doesn't mean that we don't have to develop a low carbon growth trajectory, all of which we are doing. But I think that it's very important that we keep in mind exactly who are the major emitters in the world. Because even if we were to create a zero carbon economy today, it would not solve the problem of climate change when the world's biggest emitter is withdrawing from the Paris Agreement. And I think that that's something that it's very important we keep in mind as we campaign around these issues. Let's make sure that we're campaigning towards all the targets. DG, you'll talk about the reports outstanding from three provinces. Honourable Singh, I think the reason that we have brought a frank report here, apart from the fact that it's a statutory requirement, is that unless you are identifying the problem, you can't be clear about how you would be wanting to solve that problem. Now, I think many members have talked about the fact that they would want more detail, and you will get detail, because remember, from here we get into the presentations of the APP, of the budget, all of these are forthcoming attractions. I think that what we've tried to give you in the summary at the end of this report is the direction of our thinking and the direction of our priorities and the alignment between our thinking around priorities and where we think the biggest problems are. So that detail, I think that really is the work of this committee throughout the course of this year, and that detail will definitely be forthcoming. I suppose the reason we have to consult industry, we have to consult the big emitters, we have to consult the economy is because ultimately what we're trying to balance in this portfolio is protection versus production. And we have to make sure that we're doing both. We all understand that our economy is in a very bad state at the moment, that we are shedding jobs, that jobs are the number one issue that is of concern to communities. What we are trying to do is to bring about the balance and say that we must also be concerned about protection and we must be concerned about sustainability. And I think that the point that Honourable Paulson was making about the importance of seeing green technology and green industries as an opportunity, not just as a threat, I think that that is a very important point. And the work that we are doing around the low carbon development strategy, the sector vulnerability strategy, the sector vulnerability study, and also the development path for individual sectors, low carbon development path for individual sectors, all of that work is intended to do the research and the unpacking so that we can give proper direction to the opportunities that we are talking about. As we consider that, we also have to think about this issue of the just transition. So we have to be saying, yes, indeed, there are opportunities, and those opportunities are significant, and we are unpacking what those opportunities are. Africa's automobile master plan would be looking at the question of how does South Africa get into the production of electric cars. My understanding is that the part of the reason why the Minister of Transport is targeting PRASA is because he understands that we've got to get the rail system up and working for commuters. Because at the end of the day, the working class needs to travel on trains. And that we are not managing to provide safe and affordable transportation on the rail system. So I don't think that it's not a question that colleagues are not understanding these issues and that they are not coming to the party on these issues. I think that they are. But what we have to understand is that as we adapt to climate change, so as with all change, there are winners and losers. And we have to make sure that for those who will lose, there has to be a planned, phased, and responsible process that does not leave them behind, but actually retrains them for other work opportunities. And we have to do that because we can't be completely blind to the fact that poverty, inequality, and unemployment are the major issues that are confronting our country at the moment. Now, the question of support to municipalities in the waste sector, I think, is a burning question that the department has to address. When we talk about the fact that the Waste Bureau has mission drift, if you read the Waste Act is very clear that one of the roles of the Waste Bureau is to support municipalities in their waste disposal function. But the Waste Bureau is not doing that. The Waste Bureau is involving itself in the disposal of waste tires. So part of what we're saying is that we have got to evaluate what the Waste Bureau has been doing, and we've got to redirect the Waste Bureau to be carrying out its mandate as contained in legislation. And legislation is very clear that part of their role is to be supporting municipalities. So one has already said to them, let's do an audit. Which landfills are licensed? Which landfills are not licensed? What are the infrastructure development plans of municipalities with regard to the MIG and the development of proper landfills? Because a landfill is not a piece of ground. It's a specially designed piece of infrastructure that prevents leachate, prevents substances from moving into the broader atmosphere, and so on and so forth. And it's clear that if municipalities are a weak level of government, they require support. So that is really what we need to be doing. And in relation to that, we then need to be looking at these things called buyback centres, which have been set up by our department in municipalities across the country. But how do those buyback centres function? And it relates to the point I was making earlier about how are those buyback centres integrated into the waste recycling value chain. I think that we are also looking, Honourable Singh, at the question of, it, particularly in informal settlements and rural areas, in addition to the buyback centres, where else can people dispose of recyclables? And we do have models where schools have been involved in that process, and they're actually being paid for the recyclables that they're collecting, and it assists the governing bodies to raise funds. So we're looking at that. We're also looking at, with the Consumer Goods Council, at the question of shopping centres being used as disposal sites, so that we maximise the opportunities that the public has for legitimate disposal, particularly of recyclables. Because what we find is that if you have to go into middle-class areas, people have those opportunities and they have separation and source and collection of separated recyclables at source. But if you go into other areas where there is a challenge of waste disposal in general, people have very limited opportunities for doing the right thing, even if they want to. And I think that that is part of the work that we have to do. So when we talk about the involvement of the district delivery model, what we're saying is that each one of the branches in the department has to become involved in how they support the district delivery model. So if you are in waste, how do you support municipalities properly? Honourable Paulson, you talked about what do we do with the knowledge that we have. And Chair, I really would want to urge the committee to visit the Weather Bureau. It's a very interesting experience. Because if you want to see the systematic accumulation and analysis of knowledge, the reason that we can say with certainty there is from 1921 to 2020, this is how the climate has changed, is because we have records there of weather stations from the last 100 years. So it's a very interesting experience, and the question we were posing to the Weather Bureau when we were there is exactly this question: what are you going to do with this knowledge? So that people should not feel that there are changes in weather which they can observe themselves and which they know from their own lifetimes is happening, but they don't necessarily understand why it's happening and what do they need to do in order to adjust. So that is a question we have put firmly and squarely on the Weather Bureau's table, is how are we going to share this information with communities so that communities can understand what is going to happen and respond appropriately. On the issue of fishing, colleagues, we are looking at the moment at a plan not just to protect the marine protected areas, because at the moment our enforcement officials, that is the area that they are working in. But we are also in discussion with law enforcement agencies on the broader question of how are we going to protect our territorial waters and our fishing waters. So obviously that's not the function of the Department of Environment, but we have an interest in it. And so we are in discussion at the moment with other agencies, and we are looking at the moment at how can we work with those agencies to improve the patrolling and the protection of our territorial waters and of our fish stocks. Because I think that, Honourable Paulson, you talk about aquaculture. We do have aquaculture. We do have both state-led projects and private aquaculture projects. But the biggest threat to our fishing resources at the moment is not the legal fishing people, but it's the illegal fishing people, both big and small. And we know that when it comes to things like lobster and perlimut, high-value species, that the illegal fishing there is not just a question of somebody needing food on their table. It is linked into syndicates, and we obviously are very concerned about that, and that is why we are re-looking at the question of protection of that resource, because it's a country resource and it does have to be protected. On the question of the land use emissions that was raised, I think that part of what we're trying to do around the land sector is to look at offsets. So you may not be able to prevent those emissions, which are relatively low, but you have to look at how are you investing in offset projects, carbon sinks, and so on, so that your land sector must be net carbon zero. So I think that really is the main approach that we're taking to emissions in the land sector, is to look at offsets so that we must have net carbon zero. I think I've spoken about what we're doing, with what we want to do with regard to the relationship between the district delivery model and the landfills and municipal waste disposal. Just on the methane, there has been very interesting work that has been done in Gauteng to investigate the issue of waste to energy. And I think now with the new provisions that were announced by the Minister of Energy and also by the President, we would see a situation where there would be more space for municipalities to be buying energy from those kinds of producers. And we certainly would be interested to see whether those projects could get off the ground, because I think definitely in your metro areas there's a lot of potential for the development of waste-to-energy projects, because you really have scale. On the issue of interaction with civil society, apart from what I've spoken about in relation to the district delivery model, I think it's also important to remember that we have MINMEC, which is where we meet with not only the MECs, but also with mayors. And because of the problem that we face, that environmental law is a concomitant power across three spheres of government, that is where we try and coordinate the approach to various issues. On the freshwater fish species, I suppose the complexity around that issue is that freshwater fish are not like our mammals, which are in national parks, where they are protected. Freshwater fish are in rivers, rivers flow, and some parts of rivers are in protected areas and some aren't, but there's no fences on rivers. So what it means is that your species is under threat because of general poor management of water sources and river catchments. Part of what we are in discussion with Water and Sanitation and Department of Agriculture at the moment is what can we do to better protect our water sources and our river catchments as a collective? Because I think the point has been made, Honourable Paulson was talking about the aquifer, but I think the point he is making is that we have resources that we are not properly taking care of. And I think in a water-scarce country, we've got to have a broader discussion about how do you protect your catchments and your water sources. It doesn't mean that you are declaring them no-go areas, but what it means is that you're saying how do you properly protect them. And Honourable Paulson, I really want you to recruit Honourable Winkler to help you deal with the aquifer problem. Because I think she probably knows the people that are causing the problem in the city of Cape Town. And she's got lots of energy on environmental issues. And we know that your party likes to be in coalitions with that party, so I'm sure you can assist. Okay, so I've really spoken to the whole important the issue where you were raising about seeing climate change as an opportunity, not just as a risk. Didi, do you want to just speak about who is naughty that hasn't submitted their... Yes, and give some details on aquaculture, please.
Thank you, Minister. Honourable members, just to follow on the response to Honourable Singh, the provinces that have not submitted is the Eastern Cape, Northern Cape and Free State. And we are in ongoing engagements with the provinces. In some instances, the Minister may fund the development of the state of the environment report for a province, and Northern Cape particularly had made a request, and we were still considering that, but Eastern Cape and Free State will get progress in respect of how far they are in planning to put together their State of the Environment report. In fact, the intergovernmental meeting is on this coming Friday, and MINTEC has got that item on the agenda. This last matter that was raised on aquaculture, the opportunity by Paulson. Again, I think the oceans economy highlighted the importance of the aquaculture sector, and yes, we are 1%, certainly South African species, but and the opportunity that the minister was speaking about in respect of bringing in the established industry also in the oceans master planning. There is experience with some of the fishing companies on fish farming in the marine environment, specifically abalone. There's an abalone farm that has been doing reasonably well, and there are lessons that we can take from there. So the target is to grow this percentage, and the initial hurdles were about the fact that in South Africa you don't have qualified fish doctors. In this area, as much as you want to expand, you want to also limit the disease that may impact your marine environment and destroy your natural fisheries or traditional fisheries. So those are some of the challenges that the then Department of Agriculture was trying to fix. Now we have to fix those ourselves, now that fisheries is part of the new portfolio. So and then the aquaculture bill, also the minister is reviving that in the new program. So this committee will then be dealing with the aquaculture bill to enable actually the growth and investment and certainty for that sector. I think those were the only questions. Thank you that we left.
I thought we have exhausted. It's a follow-up. Okay, Honorable Winter.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for those responses. Minister, I just want to speak to what you said about that even if we had we'll reach a zero carbon economy, it really wouldn't make a difference, because guess what, the US pulled out. Well, guess what, 24 states in the US are still adhering to the climate agreement targets, so that's not entirely true. And just because the US pulled out doesn't mean that we shouldn't do our utmost best, because creating a clean air, clean water and clean land for our people is not a secondary concern. It should be one of our primary concerns. Thank you.
That's not a question. It's a comment. Honorable Paul.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Minister, for your response. I really need to understand. There's no coalition between the DA and the EFF. And I doubt there would. Maybe on a personal level, there will be coalitions. Minister, I'd like to highlight the fact that there are currently on the West Coast also two cases of aquaculture programs that are being halted because there's a group of people there who feels that, you know, if these aquaculture projects go ahead in Saldanha, that it would affect the tourism industry there. So those are two cases, and but there are many instances where I think the Department of Environment should actually be involved, and that includes the Philippi horticultural area, as to how we can preserve this environment, as well as, you know, how we can And the two projects being offered on the West Coast are two black-owned aquaculture programs, and the people who derive income from the tourism industry are not blacks. So, you know, so what is the department's position on that?
Just in response to some of the replies by the Minister and the DG, I think Honourable Chairperson, as a committee, we just need to get more information on this Waste Bureau and what is their mandate, because I think the...
Sorry, I was behaving badly. Can you start again?
I said in response to what you've said to some of the issues that we've raised, we as a committee just need to get more information on the Waste Bureau. We might have missed what they should be doing and what they should not be doing, because they seem to be an important component in terms of waste management moving forward. And then the district delivery model, I think that's something else that we need to know. How is that going to unfold? Because we're in touch with the districts. And then, Minister, there's always this conflict between tourists not wanting to come to South Africa because of things like canned lion hunting and our approach to wildlife. From your side and your interaction with tourism, are there any conflicting views on this? Because we know it's abhorred by many around the world, we see it, and even locally. So where's the balance? What kind of balance are we going to strike? And then your interaction with the Department of Agriculture. I mean, agriculture goes and classifies certain animals as wildlife and things like that. Where are we with that? I think, as livestock, we need to, you know, bring agriculture, tourism, and you together, so that we can have an interaction with all of you. Agriculture. Thank you, Chair.
I hope there's no other hand. When the minister speaks, it would be concluding, so that is not clear. Any other issue, Honorable Member, that I won't lock you out, Honorable Winkler?
Thank you, Chair. As refers to my Honorable Singh, I did ask about the relationship with canned lion hunting and biohazards caused by illegal trafficking of wild animals out of our country under the guise of legal trade in lion bones and other animals. Since this is now a pressing global issue, what is South Africa's response? What is our response as a department to a pressing global issue? I think that, once again, this issue was not addressed on this platform, despite numerous questions by numerous members of this portfolio, and I'm starting to think that there's something slightly underhanded going on here.
So that was the last question. I don't know where the underhand comes from. Honorable Minister,
Honorable Paulson, on the two issues that you are raising, my understanding is that on the aquaculture projects in Saldanha, there is an appeal coming to me on that issue, so I don't want to comment on it. On the Philippi issue, remember the Western Cape would have constitutional authority, the Western Cape provincial government would have constitutional authority to do the EIA. That's why I'm suggesting that you speak to our honourable environmental activist sitting in front of us here. But obviously, there is always an opportunity to appeal that EIA to national level. So I think the process would be that the Western Cape would have to consider that EIA, and depending on the decision, there can always be an appeal process by either party on that matter to national level. Honourable Singh, if you read the Waste Act, it's very specific, it's very clear what the functions of the Waste Bureau are, and as the DG explained at the moment, The Waste Bureau has been on a temporary basis dealing with the waste tire issue. We've asked them to develop an exit strategy from that because it's not their mandate. And then we need to then look at what other, if any other functions they're performing and how we get them back in terms of their legislative mission. So it's not, I think it's in process. I think that we're still working on all the details of what each branch would want to do in terms of the district delivery model. But it's trying to find a concrete way in which we can get the three levels of government to work more effectively with each other in a local concrete situation. So it's work in progress. I think that we need a little bit more time because what we are doing now is that we are doing all departments are doing an evaluation of the three districts that we went to last year, and then we're saying on the basis of what we've learned, how do we refine the model and how we would work. Colleagues, on the cat lion hunting issue, I have explained. Chair, you really need to help me. We have set up a high-level panel to consider this issue. Can we allow the high-level panel to do its work? Thank you.
So that's the... I said we have come almost to the end of this session. It was a good session where we are getting a summarized version of what we have been trying to grapple with in the past. So you want to follow up on
our question? I just think that maybe the minister didn't notice when the classification of species and Department of Agriculture being involved.
Sorry, yes, on the land rights issue, I am in discussion with my counterpart on this. We've discussed it twice, and we have indicated that we're not happy. So I think that we are awaiting a more formal bilateral with officials from both sides. But we have indicated our unhappiness. Chair, can you excuse myself and the DG? The Select Committee is meeting at the same time, and they have thrown my officials out because myself and the DG are with you. Can you please help us? Because I'm just one human being, I can't be in two places at once.
Before I release you, Minister, there was an apology of the whip, Honourable Montes. He also had a clash of meetings. My last point is we have got gas at the back there. It's something we have not experienced. A delegation from three or four portfolios, chairpersons of conservation, transport, agriculture, and the Premier's office from KZN. I just wanted you to know that we had people of that nature. Actually, the questions that have been raised here about they are not only for the minister. We are supposed to have joint committee meetings as well. I think we are processing that so that we are able to, but province is here for the first time, but they want to know. They were going around, met Minister of Agriculture, Land Reform. Now they wanted to come here. So I thought before you leave, at least you must be aware that there were people here from the province. Otherwise, you are welcome, Honorable members. The meeting is closed. Thank you very much, Minister.